Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, we're going to take a look at your hips today on the program. Hip pain, I think it, no matter the age, it can be experienced by anybody. And it happens for many reasons. It could be arthritis, nerve issues, maybe even the way you carry your body when you walk. We'll talk about ways to prevent these hip pains with our guests. Great to have back Jill Tine Nissenbaum. Jill, good to see you.
It's great to be here.
Lori Tine Brody. Lori, good to see you
awesome
as well.
Awesome to be here as well.
Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy programs at UW-Madison. Lori is a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. So, when have you experienced hip pain in your life? And maybe what's helped you feel better? And questions about it? We can certainly, that's what we're going to start talking about, but we can take other questions as well. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jill, do you see a lot of patients with this kind of pain?
We see lots of patients with arthritis-based pain, particularly in our lower extremities because they're weight-bearing joints. So the majority of people who have osteoarthritis either have it in their knees, hips, sometimes ankles. You can see it in shoulders and the upper extremity, but not nearly as often because we don't put a lot of load through our joints. So there was a study that was recently done looking at people with hip osteoarthritis and looked at their walking mechanics as well as some other things compared to people who don't have hip osteoarthritis. And the group that had hip osteoarthritis was a very clean group. You can stage OA radiographically as grade 1 through grade 4, grade 4 being the worst. And what they actually did is they excluded people with grade 4. So they didn't look at the severest form of hip OA. They took people with grade 2 and grade 3. And they compared them to people who have no symptoms of hip osteoarthritis. And when they looked at them radiographically, either had a 0 or maybe mild hip OA, a grade 1. And they looked at things like their quality of life and how they load their joints. And what they found was, first of all, people with hip osteoarthritis, grade 2 or grade 3, had a poor quality of life in the hip functional outcome scores, scored worse. And the other thing they found was how they loaded their joint was very different. So they had a tendency to load a very small or focal point of their hip joint. So in the ball and socket joint on the femur, they had a tendency to load a smaller surface area when they walked. So instead of distributing the force or the load over the entire femoral head or a big portion of the head, they only loaded a small focal area. And the analogy that I give to this is climbing a ladder barefoot. So if you're barefoot and you're standing on your stair steps and your load is distributed all over the bottom of your feet, it doesn't hurt so much. If you're barefoot and let's say you get the ladder out to hang something on your Christmas tree or hang up an ornament, something like that, and you climb a ladder barefoot, and all of your load from that rung is distributed over a small part of your foot,
yeah,
it hurts.
Oh, yeah. I've done it.
There you go. Many people can relate to that. And that's the same concept with your knee, or excuse me, with any joint that has arthritis, is if we only put that load on a smaller surface area, it's going to become painful and it's going to wear down over time. And basically, we've known this for a long time, but this was a really good study that looked at it and really was able to quantify how the load changes in people with arthritis.
I'm trying to think of what it would look like to, in when you walk, to only put the load in one spot. It's hard for me to picture.
So the gait mechanics as they present may or may not look that different. For many people, it means shortening their step. Or if they only have arthritis in one hip, they don't stay on that hip as long. So instead of kind of a steady state, they'll go step, 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 step. So they won't keep the load on that leg quite as long.
Or they may rotate their hip a little bit differently. You may see people walking with one foot that's turned out a little bit more than the other one.
Oh.
And that kind of opens things up and shifts the load to a different part of the joint. So people, they're very subtle changes. And a lot of times people don't know that they even do it. But it's those that are the first subtle signs that things are heading the wrong direction. So it's really important that in those early stages, we see those people and strengthen the hip muscles and correct the gait mechanics. So one of the things that Jill mentioned was sort of changing the lever arm or the moment arm. And one of the important things is strengthening the muscles around the joint. So people, and I can't tell you how many times I hear this, people say, what can physical therapy do for arthritis? I have arthritis. How can you affect the joint? We don't change the joint itself. What we know from arthritis is people have good days, they have bad days. They have times when things feel pretty darn good, other times when they're terrible. But their joint hasn't changed
right
from one day to the next. What changes is how they're loading that joint and the inflammation that they've created from whatever they've done. So what we do in physical therapy is focus on making them aware of the mechanical changes they've made and correcting those and strengthening the muscles around the joint, because the way you're going to protect your joint in the long run is to strengthen the muscles around it, because your muscles offload your joints. They take the loads off your joints. If your muscles are weak, then every step you take, every pound you hit the ground with is transferred to that joint and it wears out your joint. But if your muscles are working efficiently, they can absorb the shock and take the load off of your joint and protect your joints for the long run.
One of the most common gait deviations you'll see in somebody who has weakness around their hip, if they have weakness in their gluteus medius muscle, it's a muscle on the side. When they step on that leg, they shift their body weight or their trunk over that hip so that muscle doesn't have to work nearly as hard. So if you see people, one of my favorite places to people watch is the airport. And you'll see people walking, and when they step on their side that has weakness, you'll see them shift their body weight over that leg because those muscles are weak. And so not only are they loading that hip joint abnormally, but now you have to think about what they're also doing in their back. So these people come in with back pain because they're shearing or shifting or loading their spine differently as well, when what they really need is good hip strengthening.
And that's why a good PT will look stem to stern.
Yep.
You know, if you come in with hip pain, they're not going to look just at your hip joint, but they're going to look at how you move. They're going to look at your back and so on. And that's another one of those subtle gait deviations that the average person might not pick up. But those of us who sit in people watch go, oh, some weak glute medius over there.
Exactly. Yes.
What are the best ways to sort of strengthen, or is there one?
Well, one size does not fit all. So seeing a physical therapist and helping them decide if you need isolated muscle strengthening for a very specific muscle, or if you can do it in conjunction with other muscles, such as in a closed chain, let's say a squat type of activity, those are the kind of things that a physical therapist will help you decide. If you need kind of isolated individual muscle strengthening, if we can strengthen the group as a whole, if you need loaded, if you can tolerate loaded strengthening, or if the joint needs to be unloaded to be strengthened, if you need to be in a pool and do some things non-weight bearing, all of those things come into play when a physical therapist designs a specific strengthening program for you.
Interestingly, in the locker room right before I came here, there's a woman who's having some hip pain, and she told me that her physical therapist gave her that one-legged, like the Russian deadlift, bent over, and she said, wow, I can really feel that on the side of my hip.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, it's really working for her.
Right.
Well, we have some callers with questions. Reggie in Oshkosh has something that relates to this, I believe.
Oh.
Let's go there. Hi, Reggie.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Awesome. So, yeah, I have a hip pain, and I think it's more nerve than muscular, but it runs like along my pelvic bone and sometimes up into my lower back, and it can just be paralyzing.
Oh, he's actually, Reggie is a truck driver.
Right.
And so He had some surgery as a child.
Right. But we don't know what that surgery was. Right.
And he's driving truck right now, right. So we kind of lost him there.
Right. He could have had dysplasia as a child, mm-hmm. or depending on how old he was, he could have had a skiffy mm-hmm. or something like that. So he could have had multiple different things going on with his hip. That's what Lori and I are discussing right now. But the issue is he has to sit. So he's a truck driver and he's sitting, so this could not only impact his hip, but it could also be coming from his low back. And the other thing we have to think about, not only is he sitting, but he's sitting in a truck, and we know that vibration is also a factor that can cause pain. So Reggie has a lot of different variables that could be causing his pain. It could be coming from his back. It could be coming from his hip. It could be a combination of both. We don't know if it's his right leg or is his left leg.
And it is, because we just got information. It's his left hip, and he had surgery when he was 11. So it could have been a skiffy.
Probably a skiffy.
Yeah, a slip capital femoral epiphyses.
Right. So he probably had some pinning done in his hip, mm-hmm. Actually through his femur, to kind of stabilize his femoral head.
Yeah. So the idea would be, Reggie, if you're still listening, that if you haven't seen a PT and you had surgery, you know, a long time ago when you were 11, it's time to come in and get someone to look at that again. There could be some sequelae from your surgery back when you were 11. There's also, because of your truck driving, it could be the vibration. It could be coming from your back. It could be a primary left hip problem if you're using a clutch when you drive. So there are a lot of number of possibilities. And one of the things that's frustrating for people who come in with hip pain is often we don't know if the primary source of pain is actually your hip or if it's your back, because the two of them tend to run together and mimic each other. So if you look at a Venn diagram mm-hmm. of back problems and hip problems, there's a big area of overlap. Right. So you really need someone to look at it to sort it out. There are really only a few signs and symptoms that really speak hip.
There we go. Reggie, thank you so much. Good luck. So your advice, get in to see.
Yeah, get in to see somebody. It's too hard to sort out the source of that, especially with his history and with his occupation. He really needs to get on a good program.
Right. And it will be challenging, because if sitting and vibration are contributing factors to his pain, those are hard things for him to get away from. Mm-hmm. So we really can't do anything about the vibration.
Although there are seats.
There are seat things mm-hmm. that we can look at. But we can also make sure that ergonomically he's seated appropriately in his truck, and that he's not reaching too far, that he has a good lumbar support. So there are some things within the confines of his job that could still potentially help Reggie.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Bree in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Bree.
Hi, thank you so much, Larry, and I have always loved this program so much, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
So my comment was, not a question, but a comment. I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis when I was 25 years old, and I'm 32 now, and my grandmother had Crohn's disease around the same time we both were diagnosed. And she had mentioned to me that she had gone gluten-free for a little while and gotten a lot of relief from her pain, of course, different kind of pain. And I just wanted to share that I gave it a try, and I've been strictly gluten-free for about 7 years now, and I am almost completely pain-free. And, of course, you get little aches and pains here and there, but it has drastically changed my quality of life. So thank you so much.
Oh, Bree, thanks for calling. Comments?
So, you know, the Arthritis Foundation recommends that people decrease their gluten intake if they have arthritis. So rheumatoid arthritis is a different category, and the recommendation is to talk with your physician, and they don't actually recommend going gluten-free unless you have a diagnosis of Crohn's or celiac or some other gluten intolerance. So if you do have arthritis, you know, what we would call garden variety osteoarthritis, certainly decreasing your gluten makes a lot of sense. But if if you have rheumatoid arthritis, you should check with your healthcare provider and see if a referral to a registered dietitian would be in order to do a good examination and decide what's the right diet for you.
Do we know why gluten can create problems?
It increases inflammation.
They're inflammatory markers in a lot of gluten-rich foods. And so people are encouraged to stay away from any food that has an inflammatory marker in it or can create inflammation. And a lot of those happen to be tied to gluten. Not all of them.
Right. So yes, thank you, Bree, for that. Yeah. Bringing
absolutely.
That up. That's a great
absolutely.
Piece of advice.
We have conversations with our athletes about if they feel that their aches and pains are associated with diet. So it is something to kind of think about. Are you eating a lot of foods that are highly processed even? So there's lots of variables that can go into it, but seeing a dietitian is actually a very good strategy if you feel that your signs and symptoms are correlative with food intake. Yeah.
Right. And just getting guidance on how to eat and make sure that you get the right nutrients in your diet, not just, you know, reading on the internet of, you know, oh, I should eat this, I shouldn't eat that, but really getting some good medical advice if you have a medical condition such as rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah. So one of the things, I was just at a conference and a physical therapist was talking about her research that she does in conjunctions with registered dietitians, knowing that physical therapists are not, we many times rely on our colleagues in the world of dietetics to help us with guidelines. But one of the things that she said that she's heard her registered dietitian friends say is that you should eat 35 different foods a week.
Oh.
And so not only, you think
that's
about your
five a day.
That's five a day. I know I did the math too.
Like, okay.
So not only, you know, fruits and vegetables, but within that context, eat different fruits and vegetables. So you may eat, well, I ate my fruits and vegetables today, but you shouldn't be eating strawberries and apples 7 days a week. You should mix it up. So thinking about, I know, one more thing to think about. So if you start making a mental checklist, it helps you kind of mix up even within those categories, which I think is also very important.
Mm-hmm.
You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, physical therapist Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody. Great to have them with us, and great to have Nigel O'Shea as our engineer, Natalie Guyette, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues, we've zeroed in a little bit on hip pain and arthritic hip pain, but other things as well with Lori Tyne-Brody and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum. I'm Larry Mueller. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Norman in Wausau next. Hi, Norman.
Hi. Larry, I'd like to ask your guests if they have any suggestions for lower extremity weakness, especially in the knees. And then my right knee, I got apparently, according to an MRI, a Baker's cyst, a couple of centimeters, I think 3.9 by 3.5. And that particular knee will creak when I try to get up. I'm having extreme difficulty getting up from a chair without armrests. And also sitting down, in other words, you tend to drop instead
yes.
of having a controlled sit.
Yep, we call those ploppers.
Yeah.
I've seen a physical therapist. I'm seeing him now. I've seen him a couple of times. He's given me a number of exercises to try. The problem is some of them I just physically can't do. In other words, I'm supposed to do it with one weight on one leg and then stretch the other one sideways or whatever. But I can't do that without hanging on to something. I'm just, my balance is not that good, or the strength isn't there. So I'm wondering, since I'm generally weak in my lower extremities, if there's any simple exercise that will help with strength in my knees so that I have an easier time to get up and it won't hurt and crack in my right knee when I do it.
Okay.
So, Norman, the first thing is I hope you're going back to your physical therapist, because that's feedback that we often get. So we see people, you know, for a visit and we evaluate them. And if you think about exercise, it occurs along a very large continuum. And so we try to take our best shot at what we think is the right dosage of exercise for you to start with, but sometimes it's not right. And so it's really important that you not give up and say, oh, physical therapy isn't going to work because the things they gave me hurt. It just means we overshot it a little bit. So you really need to go back and give your physical therapist that feedback. And those exercises and activities will be retooled to what works for you.
Right. I teach physical therapy students, and it's really easy to make an exercise harder. It's more difficult to make an exercise easier to meet the needs of your patients. But Norman, I appreciate everything you're saying, and there's a risk of falls here. There's weakness here. There's many factors that contribute to this. So yes, I think going back to your physical therapist and explaining the difficulties you're having is really important so they can make your exercises fit where you are at this point in time, hopefully getting you stronger so eventually you can do the current exercises that you're doing now successfully. The other place that would be a great place to exercise because of the falls risk and everything you mentioned is the pool.
Right. So I don't know if you have access to a pool somewhere. I'm sure there is in Wausau. The nice thing
the lakes are probably frozen.
The
now.
Lakes are probably a little cold in Wausau right now, yeah, or the river. But the pool's a great place to exercise. So first of all, with that Baker cyst, that's a swelling. It's like a bubble in the tire. And when your knee swells a little bit, it pushes that bubble out the back. So that's sort of your canary in the coal mine for I've overloaded my knee and caused some swelling. So the hydrostatic pressure of the water will help minimize swelling, and it allows you to exercise and build strength without all of your body weight on your knee. Mm-hmm. The problem is, particularly with lower extremity joints like we've been talking about today, knees and hips, the strengthening tends to happen in a weight-bearing position. And if you don't have the strength to do the exercises with your full weight bearing, we need to find a way to do it without your full weight. And one of those ways is in a pool. So there's a lot of things you can do to strengthen using the water as resistance.
And there's other pieces of equipment that a physical therapist may or may not have in their clinic that are like sitting down, but it's controlled and it's not all of your body weight. So there's something called a shuttle or a leg press machine, something like that.
A new step,
which can mimic the sitting without plopping, but it can control how much load you put through it so you don't have to do all of your body
right.
weight.
And, you know, one of the things that we as physical therapists I see have tended toward, and that is with chronic conditions such as arthritis, we give people a home exercise program and we send them on their way to do that. Sometimes you have to be seen on a regular basis in the clinic with some structured exercises to get you to the point where you can actually be successful at home. And I would certainly advocate for that as well.
Yeah. Would the exercises he's doing now that he can't really do well, could he do them in the pool?
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Probably. My guess is that they're weight-bearing exercises, squatting kinds of things with his full body weight. And so he's unable to do those with full body weight. So doing them with limited body weight in a pool would be a great way to start.
Yeah. Norman, thank you so much. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Mary in Menominee will give you a chance now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I was wondering, I have bursitis in my shoulders and my hips. What causes it and how can I alleviate it? I've been on therapy for probably close to 7 years now, where when it gets bad, I got to go back in. I exercise daily for about an hour, and it still keeps popping up on me.
What kind of therapy do you get? Are you going to a physical therapist or?
Right. I was in a wheelchair for 4 years, so I had water therapy to start with. I couldn't even stand, and now I walk without a cane. You have to keep working on it.
So this is from bursitis in your hips?
In my hips, yeah.
Okay. Is it a trochanteric bursitis? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Okay. All right. I'm just wondering because I see many people with bursitis, and I can't remember the last time I saw somebody in a wheelchair from bursitis,
right.
That
That's
it was
very,
that debilitating. Right. It makes me wonder if there was something else going on besides the bursitis. And sometimes we see that.
Yeah, there was nerve damage, yeah.
Okay. Well, So what kind of nerve damage? So nerve damage is completely different from bursitis.
Right. I had myopathy and neuropathy.
Okay. All right. So that makes more sense because it's not the bursitis that put you in the wheelchair. It was the neuropathy.
My guess is the bursitis was a side effect of that.
Being in a wheelchair.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
Exactly. So I'll tell you what a bursa is. So a bursa, they have bursa all over your body, generally around joints, and they are little small fluid-filled sacs that sit between tendons and bone and ligaments and bone, and they generally provide areas of cushion between connective tissue structures like tendons and ligaments and bones. They can become inflamed and swell if they get irritated. So, for example, the subacromial bursa in your shoulder, which is the most likely culprit, gets really aggravated if you're doing a lot of overhead work. So we see it in people who, you know, do work with their arms overhead a lot or do repetitive upper extremity work. In the hip, we see bursitis in people, runners who are running downhill a lot. We see it in people who do a lot of repetitive hip flexion and extension activities.
Bikers, things like that.
Yeah.
So the bursa can become inflamed because of all that overuse. It can become inflamed because there's some sort of mechanical pinch on it. And then you get an itis like you do with anything else, and it becomes hot, warm, irritated, thick, swollen, and becomes painful. So to treat bursitis, first of all, you have to figure out why the individual got their bursa irritated in the first place. Was it the fact that they did an activity that they hadn't done for a very long time excessively? Was it the fact that they raked up heavy, heavy, heavy wet leaves that had been sitting under a snow pile and they hadn't done that for a long time and that irritated them? So you have to figure out what the driver was in the first place. And then as physical therapists, we also reassess the mechanics of the joint to make sure that your joint mechanics are moving appropriately so it's not infringing on or pinching, for example, your subacromial bursa. And then the next thing we would do is make sure all of the structures around the joint, such as the muscles, are strong enough to support the joint so you don't chronically keep pinching or irritating this joint. So I think you have, Mary, a very unique case because you had some underlying pathology that went along with your bursitis. So the conversation that we just had is much more geared for people who wouldn't have come with all the comorbidities or the issues that you had too, because you clearly obviously had a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Mary, does that help?
Thank you.
Yes. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Well, it's good that she's continuing to exercise.
Absolutely.
That's going to be the best thing she can do to keep that stuff at bay.
You heard her say she works at it. That's
yep.
great.
That's right.
Great. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Benjamin in Green Bay will give you a chance now. Hi, Benjamin.
Good morning.
Morning.
So I have a question on a dark cherry vitamin supposed to be good for arthritic condition. By a company by Montero Rossi.
What kind of vitamin was that, Benjamin?
A dark cherry.
Dark cherry.
But do you know what it's rich in, what vitamin it's
My guess is intern? It's a C. My
probably.
Guess would be a C if it's cherry.
Yeah.
Not C for cherry, but
I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
Probably vitamin C.
So that's a really good question, Benjamin. So we discussed this earlier in terms of anti-inflammatories and decreasing gluten. The other side of that teeter-totter is this suggestion that vitamin C has anti-inflammatory properties. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, long-term studies have not held that out to be true. Vitamin C is a water-soluble vitamin, so when your body has as much as it needs, the rest of it ends up
in your urine.
In your urine, right, exactly. So I understand why the company is telling you it's good for arthritis, but actually getting enough vitamin C in your diet, and this is a great time of year to get vitamin C in your diet from all the citrus that's available,
right.
I would suggest that and some dark leaf spinach and some other foods that are rich in vitamin C would be a better use of your $1,000.
Right. And it also said, I looked it up on Dr. Google.
Dr. Google.
And it also said that it also has potassium and fiber. So,
okay.
So all of those things are nutrients that you can get through a well-balanced diet.
Right.
Yeah.
And as a general rule, getting things through foods is a better way than taking some sort of supplement.
Now, exactly.
Having said that, if there's some reason you can't ingest that particular food or you're low in it, then obviously supplementation is a good idea. But most people will tell you that with the exception of vitamin D, which is very difficult to get in Wisconsin because of our lack of sun, you should be getting foods through your diet.
Right. No one's really sure if there are other chemicals or other components of food that aid in the absorption and retention of those vitamins through the food as compared to taking a supplement.
Right.
It's actually higher in vitamin A than it is in vitamin C.
There you go.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Benjamin, for that question.
Larry in Racine, we'll go to you next. Hi.
Yes, good morning. I don't know if you can help me or not. I'm 66. And I sat around for 2 years and did nothing after retirement.
Okay.
I think that's what you're supposed to do after you retire, right?
I guess. but anyway, so about 10 weeks ago now, I joined the gym. I go 5 days a week. I do the sauna every day and all that. And then I picked up pickleball about 2 months ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I play maybe 8 to 10 hours a week with that.
Nice.
My question is, at some point, I knew I was going to start feeling stronger, which I do, but every morning when I wake up, it's like my body's been through a war. Now, at some point in time, you would think that I would not have that feeling.
You would hope so, right?
I guess I hope so.
When you go to the gym 5 days a week, do you do the same thing every single day?
No.
I'm
working on my core.
Oh, good.
To help my balance and stuff. And then, you know, I'll do some weight, a little bit of weight and stuff.
Okay. So we have 8 to 10 hours of pickleball. So that's a couple hours 5 days a week?
Well, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday.
Okay.
So you're playing a pretty long bout. So then do you also go to the gym those days?
Right. Like I played pickleball today for a couple hours, and then this afternoon I'll go to the gym.
For how long?
Couple hours.
Okay. Well,
I spend a half hour in the sauna, and then I'll do an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours of exercise.
That's a lot of activity, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, in the grand scheme of things, again, we talk about dosing activity. So American College of Sports Medicine says minimum of 5 days a week of exercise. What you may want to do is you're playing pickleball 3 days. You may want to go to the gym 3 other days and not double that up.
Or do lighter things those days at the gym.
Yeah.
So pickleball, I would consider a little bit more cardiovascular. Mm-hmm. So maybe on those days you do some light weights instead and maybe do cardio on opposite days. I think you're almost into overtraining.
Right, right. So, that would be my guess. And mm-hmm. how are you doing on the nutrition end of it? Are you refueling yourself with sufficient protein?
That's what I was thinking.
And
about.
Especially 30 minutes in the sauna.
Yeah, I'm not loving the 30 minutes in the sauna thing, but...
Oh, no? How come?
Well, because it can be dehydrating. And it can...
I drink 3 liters of water a day.
Okay.
Okay.
All
because
right.
Because we don't want to mess up your electrolytes. That's
right.
The big thing, is you can
right.
run into an electrolyte imbalance with
right.
with that kind of sauna.
And are you getting enough protein?
I try to get about 100 grams a day.
Okay. All right. So you should be okay there. So then I would say it comes down to your exercise dosage. And mm-hmm. what I think you should do at this point is play around with it a little bit and see if you can find the right mix. I love that you're doing pickleball. It's really important for socialization as in your retirement, as well as the gym. But try to figure out a dosage that doesn't leave you feeling like you've been to war the next morning.
Right.
There you go. Good luck, Larry. You're on the right track.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that's a great problem to have. To tell somebody to decrease and and modify their exercise? Boy, you don't get to say that very often. No.
Doesn't happen very often.
Merry Christmas to us.
Gail, thanks, Larry. Gail in Middleton will go to you next. Hi, Gail.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a little bit of a quandary here. I have early November developed some back issues, ended up with herniated discs in my L4, L5 lumbar region. Have gone from just needing help, even wheelchair walker there, to being now able to walk independently and without pain. Haven't had any pain medication or gabapentin, which is what I was on there for the last 5-6 days. I had an appointment for a nerve block injection, and I am wondering, I was thinking of canceling that injection, and my a daughter is feeling quite strongly that I go ahead and have that nerve block. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yes, we do.
Sure, sure. Do we have an opinion on that, Gail?
Yes.
So you're seeing physical therapy, correct?
Yes, I am.
And what does the physical therapist say?
I haven't asked that question.
Oh.
I just ran into this
Got it.
Conflict with my daughter yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a weekend. So a few things, and then Jill has something to say also.
I always do.
I know she always does. So I would start by asking your physical therapist, because your physical therapist has put his or her hands on you and observed your progress. So is your progress meeting the expectations that we would hope you have after a herniated disc? Does your therapist anticipate or see any plateaus? So usually if you're making steady progress and you're close to where you want to be, you can delay, you can push back that shot and see how you do. If the physical therapist is saying, yeah, you're making progress, but I see us getting stuck, the shot can help jumpstart you and kind of help move things along and open the door to more advanced physical therapy.
And I would agree. As I say, it takes 2 points to make a line, 3 to make a trend. So your PT will have seen you repeatedly, and they can see if you're on that upward trajectory and which in which that in which direction that trajectory is going. And like Lori said, if you are somewhat plateaued, this can be a jump starter. It's not a I have to have it now or I can never have it. The window of opportunity is not closed on this. So it's nice to keep these things in your back pocket and, you know, use them at a time when you feel you really need that. Whether it's this time or whether you reach a plateau later, it's always going to be there. So I think those are things that you should take into consideration. And I think this is a great conversation to have with your PT.
So is what if the shot's due today and I can't get to the PT?
Give them a call.
Just give them a call.
Absolutely.
You can just give a call.
Give your call to your PT and say, hey, I have this on the docket. What do you think?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Good luck, Gail. Thank you so much.
Yeah, let us know how you do.
Yeah.
Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for your help with this. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Appreciate the call. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today, we've zeroed in a little bit on hip pain and arthritic hip pain, but taking other questions as well as we visit with Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, who is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Great to have them with us. Give a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Jennifer in Delavan, we'll go to you next. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning. Hey, back in September, I did an extensive backpacking trip through the Alps, and I had no knee problem or any problems at all while I was hiking, but 2 weeks after I got back, I developed this pain in my left knee, just lateral and slightly below my patella. I thought it would be gone by now. I thought maybe I just overworked it, but it's still there, especially when I hit the stairs. Any idea for me?
So you were backpacking. Did you have a load? Did you have heavy backpacks on? And had you done some training for this?
Yeah, about 20 pounds. And I had trained for about 3 months before I took the trip.
Okay. And your pain didn't come on until 2 weeks after?
2 weeks after.
That seems a little unusual. Like,
Well, it's hard to say. So what did you do after you came back?
Basically nothing. I didn't even go hiking for 2 weeks.
And did you do a lot of sitting at that point? Does your work involve a lot of sitting?
It does, yeah.
Okay. It's possible that, yeah, who knows? It sounds like patellofemoral pain is what it sounds like.
Yeah, but she said it's inferior to her patella and lateral. Does it feel like it's on your joint line?
If I bend my knee, there's a slight like bump, like a protrusion that you have when you bend your knee, and it feels like it's right there, like almost like it's at a tendon or something.
It could be a bursitis too, and that would come on more slowly, like a inferior patellar bursitis. Yeah, around the kneecap there are a number of different players. So you have the undersurface of the kneecap, which is what we see most commonly. But you can also have a tendinopathy in the tendon. You can have a fat pad problem, which would manifest that way also. And there are several bursa around that tendon. So it's something related to your kneecap, probably from the repetitive hiking and then sitting.
Right. There's 14 bursa around the knee, just for a fun fact.
Oh, thank you.
I know.
I sleep better tonight.
Regardless of what it is, it's lasting longer than it should. So if you, you know, had this hiking trip and we're correlating it with your hiking trip and you, you know, you had this flare up, normal things would have relieved themselves or at least decreased by now. It's time to see a physical therapist.
Right, and sort this out because we're not going to be able to solve this.
Especially
on the radio.
As active as you are and there's lots of things you want to do.
So
I would do that.
Yeah, you know, something that's going to creep up a couple weeks later would be a slow brewing inflammation of some sort.
Right.
There you go. Yeah. Jennifer, good luck. Appreciate the call. Jackie emailed to ask about some tingling feelings from the knees down to toes, some stabbing pains in the toes and ankles, makes it hard to stand too long without being in pain. She had an EMG and was diagnosed with neuropathy. Any ideas of what to do to help with this?
Oh boy.
Yeah, neuropathy is one of the most difficult things to treat. It is a problem with your nerves where you have a pathological change in your nerves. And oftentimes it's what we call idiopathic. We don't know why people develop neuropathy. Sometimes we know why they do because they have pressure on their nerves from their spinal cord, but it's basically damage to your nerves. And so it presents with all kinds of nerve-related pain. Mm. It can be burning. It can be tingling. It can be
lightning.
It can feel like I'm walking on gravel. Mm-hmm. It manifests in all kinds of different ways in people. And it happens most prominently in feet, lower legs, and sometimes hands. But feet is the big one. And a lot of times it's numbness where people can't feel their feet, so they don't know where they are in space when they're walking. So then they trip and fall, and it can lead to a whole host of problems. From a physical therapy point of view, there's not much that we can do for the symptoms.
Correct.
So what we tend to do is work with them on things like balance and things like making sure to check their feet on a daily basis. In terms of activity, we try to keep them active so that they don't gain weight because extra weight gain is also going to put them at risk. So I see a fair number of people in the pool for this because they can move in the pool without all that weight on their feet. That's so painful. So
there we go. Tom in Buffalo County, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Yeah, I've actually got two questions. Number one, when I start walking, I don't go relatively fast. I only go on the treadmill at about 2.7 miles per hour. But in my right leg, I'll develop a pain there right away, and then it goes away after about 10 minutes. The second question is, first time I've heard you guys mention the NuStep machine, which I like to use a lot. But I get a pain right underneath my kneecap on my left leg, and I try to use that thing about 20 minutes, level 6, and try to go 90 to 100 steps per minute. I get this pain under my left kneecap, and I've gotten that for several years.
Yeah.
Real serious, but, you know.
Does it then go away? Does the left knee pain go away when you stop the new step?
For the most part, yes, but as soon as you mentioned the new step, I pressed on right there into my knee, and I can feel where it's sore right now.
Sounds like patellofemoral pain.
It does sound like patellofemoral pain. So in terms of the new step, I would try changing my foot position on the new step, because whatever position you're in, you are loading a certain point underneath your kneecap, sort of like Jill's analogy of going up the ladder, which I really like barefoot. So you're overloading a certain portion of the undersurface of your kneecap. And sometimes you can modify that by adjusting where your foot is on the step or by adjusting the range you work.
Right. Putting your seat back. Sometimes people sit a little too close and it's that part. So I would start with, don't throw too many variables in at once. I'd probably start with changing my foot position. And if that doesn't make a difference, then I'd probably put my seat back a notch or two.
Right.
The hip.
And then the hip pain. That comes on with the treadmill.
Well, the first 10 minutes, that sounds arthritic.
And then it goes away.
And, or bursitic.
Bursitic. But then it goes away. Floaty. And then when you finish the treadmill, then does your hip pain come back or it's just gone?
No, it's gone then. It just...
Yeah.
Doctor suggested a couple of years ago that I might have bursitis.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. It could be, although I would think a bursitis would come back.
It might, and it might be just a little bit of tightness in your capsule where once he gets moving and gets some fluid going, it kind of stretches out.
Right.
So it would be, you know, for both of these things, you want to be active. You're telling us you're doing all these active things. We want to keep you moving. Wouldn't be a bad idea to see a physical therapist for just a couple visits and see if we need to kind of just reroute these things a little bit to get you right back on track. It might be a couple simple stretching and mobility exercises for the hip and a couple specific things for the knee.
Yeah. So just, you know, in terms of that first 10 minutes thing relative to the start of the conversation about arthritis in your hip, your joints have fluid in them. And so if you haven't been up and moving around a lot, and this is why people feel stiff when they get out of their chair or they get out of bed first thing in the morning, the way your joints get their nutrition is by diffusion of that synovial fluid across the joint surfaces. So if you haven't been moving, they're not getting their nutrition. So it isn't until after you start to get moving that that synovial fluid bathe those surfaces. Yes, thank you. Have you heard this before?
Maybe a time or two.
Can you do something before you start?
Yeah, that's a great...
Right, yes. So simple things like doing a few little mini squats or swinging your legs slow and controlled and kind of getting that fluid going is great. The analogy I give people is it's like starting a car in Wisconsin in the dead of winter. And, you know, it's kind of and then once things get going and the fluid gets going around the cylinders in your engine, they run great. But it takes a little bit to get going. So you might need to do a little bit of movement first to get that going.
Right. So we tell people before you get out of bed, move your hips and knees around back and forth a little bit. Kind of get those fluids going, decrease their viscosity a little bit and then go.
There you go, Tom. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Now, Karen in Chippewa Falls, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I had hip pain just horrible for years and years and years. I'm 58 now, and this was back when I was probably in my early 40s. And I had injections in my back. I did a ton of physical therapy. Anyways, it just... you know, relief for a while, then come back. And I decided to go to an acupuncturist after an auto accident. And come to find out, I had these really tight muscles. My hip pain continued all this time. And I had these really tight muscles on either side of my spine. I don't know.
Multifidi?
Tendons or whatever.
Yeah.
And he actually did acupuncture on those two spots. And after probably about three treatments, I have never had hip pain again. And that was almost 8 years ago.
That's fabulous.
And if I ever start having, if I, you know, ever feel like my back is getting tight, I start just, you know, trying to do lots of things. But, you know, and the other thing is that I also, because of the car accident, I had a head injury. And so I had a lot of problems with balance. It's not as bad now. But I think the other thing that was contributing to my tight back and then to my hip pain and then to my knee pain was that when I went to this super special intensive therapy for my balance, I learned that I locked my hip and my knees kind of when I walked.
Sure.
So that was my legs were holding me up.
Right.
And what I realized was that's the wrong thing to do. You are balanced with your core and you have to let your legs control swing, you know, but pay attention to where your feet are going, set them correctly. Don't be wobbling your legs back and forth, but hold yourself together with your core.
That's fabulous. You know? Yes, exactly. Those are great points. And my best guess is that because of her fear of falling, she was probably splinting, kind of locking her joints out, causing all that pain. And I'm so glad that she found something that managed her hip pain. We love our friends, the acupuncturists, and it's very common for a patient to be seen concurrently by an acupuncturist and a physical therapist.
Absolutely. And one of the things to remember, again, back in that Venn diagram of overlapping hip and low back pain, your hip flexor muscles, those muscles in the front of your hips that are shortened all day long because we sit so much, they attach to the front of your low back. And so when you have tightness in the front of your hips, it can cause back pain.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times those two things run together.
Karen, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests from today from the University of Wisconsin. Lori's with the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. They'll be with us right up till 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Our physical therapists are with us. This time we're talking hip pain and many different reasons for some of us experiencing it, but we're taking other questions as well, of course, in the physical therapy area. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests. Questions for them, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. And I think we'll just go right back to the phones. Dwayne in Antigo, thanks for waiting, Dwayne. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I drive truck. I'm going to be 59 in May, and I got my hip kind of feels funny sometimes. And if I twitch it to outward, it pops.
Yep.
And then it feels fine. Is that a pre-existing condition or what?
So does it bother you then? Is it painful?
No, it's fine after it pops like that. Usually in the morning, or I drive trucks sometimes midday, I can feel it feels kind of funny. And then I'll pop it, and then it's fine. But I was just wondering.
Yeah, my guess, what are you guessing? Labral tear?
It depends on if the pop is deep or if it's more superficial.
Oh, it could be.
If it's, does the pop feel like it's deep in your hip joint, or does it feel like it's more on the outside of your hip?
I would say deep.
Yeah, so a deep pop or we sort of go through deep pop, clunk versus a pop, click.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you ever have an injury to that hip that you know of?
No.
Okay. Well, the most likely culprit is what we call a labral tear. You've maybe heard of a meniscus tear in your knee. People tear the cartilage in their knee, their meniscus. So the hip also has a similar kind of connective tissue, a dense connective tissue that deepens the socket, and it's called the labrum of your hip. And sometimes you can injure that, or it can be torn, or if that's the leg you're stepping a lot or doing heavy lifting, you can damage that labrum. So it may be that from sitting, you get a little bit of shifting of that tear, and then you move it in some way, and it kind of moves it back in place. So is it normal? Generally not. We tend to not worry too much about stuff that doesn't hurt.
Right.
But if it starts to bother you at some point, that's when you should get it checked out.
And what will probably happen when you get it checked out is many times they will do an ultrasound-guided injection. So they will do an injection into your hip joint with lidocaine to see if indeed your pain goes away. Because for many people, tears in their labrum are what we call incidental findings. So they aren't necessarily a pain generator. And you'd hate to go and treat something that isn't the pain generator. So what they'll do is they inject your hip joint with a little bit of steroid and then some lidocaine, some numbing medicine. And if you think, holy smokes, my hip feels like $1 million. Ever since you put that lidocaine injection into my joint, I'm one happy camper. Then lo and behold, the something inside the joint is indeed the culprit, which could be a labral tear. If they do that injection and absolutely nothing changes, well, then you have a labral tear, but that is not your pain driver, and you'd hate to treat that and waste a lot of time and money treating the wrong thing.
Well, there we go. Mm-hmm. Duane, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Kim in Madison will give you a chance. Hi, Kim.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm so glad to be on. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you.
About almost 2 years ago, I started having what I thought was kind of restless leg. Did some of the remedies like the soap under the sheets that seemed to help. After about 8 months of that, I was getting more lower leg pain with both legs. Then my hips started hurting. We're talking within maybe like the last year where I couldn't do figure four. I couldn't do butterfly pose with yoga, different things with my left hip. I finally went in and had a radiograph, and they my lumbar spine, I have advanced multi-level lumbar spondylosis. Mm-hmm. The hips, sclerosis, yep. Marginal osteophyte formation, and degenerative changes left worse than right.
Mm-hmm. Yep, hip arthritis.
Yeah, so I have a lot of pain, and it's mostly at night. You know, I've tried anti-inflammatories, and I mean just taking them regularly for a period of time, and it doesn't really seem to do any help. I ski, I bike, I do yoga. Walking is not comfortable anymore. And I just wonder what the next step is, if I need to, you know, am I headed toward a hip replacement, or is it just simply more arthritic changes?
So, Kim, have you seen a physical therapist about this?
Not directly for the hips. No, I have not, because initially it was my knee and it kind of...
So in answer to your question, I would not think about a hip replacement until you've been to therapy, because we need to sort out both back and the hip. As I said earlier in the show, there's a lot of overlap between those, and we need to look at your activities. You're very active, and we need to figure out a program to help support you in those activities, given what's happening with your hip and your low back. It may be that you need some mobilization around your hip. You may be overloading your back because of your hip. You may be overloading your hip because of your back. In any case, that needs to be sorted out, and there are many, many steps in between where you're at today and a hip replacement.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
So definitely. I'd see a PT, and I can see in my head a number of different options for you.
Right. Yeah, depending.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, very active, and just may need to tweak, change, modify a few things. And so we want to keep Kim active. Yeah. So absolutely.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you.
The last thing I'll say, and actually maybe we'll talk about this with Vivian and hip replacements, is that hip replacement's a very good surgery. Yeah. You don't want to jump into it before you have to, but it has good outcomes.
Right.
So stay listening, Kim, as we turn to Vivian in Green Bay. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. 6.5 years. Oh, I love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
Been listening for decades. 6.5 years ago, I had a total right hip replacement. And I had mild complications. I had the sense, this isn't right. I feel like I'm a little lopsided. My leg is shorter on that side. It's not as strong. And then I had pain on the opposite leg on the outside of the calf.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned it to my GP, well, take an aspirin or something before you go to bed. And then it dawned on me that that pain on the opposite leg felt exactly like the pain had on the operated leg, the hip.
Mm-hmm.
When in therapy, they roll over your IT to break, to loosen it up. And I thought, it feels just like that. I think it's the IT band on the good leg. I pursued lifts in my right shoe to compensate for the fact that I, to me, it was a shorter leg. And within a day or two, the pain on the left leg IT band was gone, and it has not returned. So I think lots of people who haven't considered that they might now be walking lopsided, they should try lifts until they get the right level, because they come sort of in peel-off.
Yes, right. They do.
Right. So, yep. And so depending on the level of arthritis you had and how your joint replacement went and all of that, you could experience a slight leg length change after a total hip, albeit slight. So what are you looking at me for? My sister's eyes got
big. I know, because I have something to say about that.
I'm sure you do. Having said that, it is normal for people to have a slight leg length difference. So we don't always correct them. And there are guidelines for when you should correct and how much you should correct. So all those things should be taken into consideration. And before I would we call it posting someone or give them a lift or a support, you need to make darn sure that all the muscles are appropriately stretched out and all the muscles are strengthened, or what you're going to do is you're just going to feed into that muscle imbalance. Is that what you were going to say, Lori?
It isn't what I was going to say.
Shoot.
What were you going to say?
Do tell.
Do tell. Well, Vivian's in Green Bay and her surgery was 6.5 years ago. What I've observed from many of the surgeons in this area is that the operated leg is a little bit longer, not actually shorter. And they do that intentionally so that when you step down on it, you get good seating of the femoral head into the acetabulum. And I've had these conversations with them, and I say, you know, this patient's having pain in the other leg, they're having back pain now, and so on. And their response is always, you have to wait 6 months to see if it evens out.
I agree.
So then my question is always, is it really evening out, or is it just compensating someplace else?
Right. Exactly.
So, and we don't know the answer to that. So that's the long answer, Vivian, and I'm really glad that you took matters in your own hands and it worked out for you. For others, I'd say you need to have this conversation with your surgeon and see what the thinking is. So keep in touch with both your surgeon and your physical therapist to process this issue, and don't necessarily take it on yourself.
Right. And it's not uncommon for the surgical leg to be a little longer, especially if you were bone on bone, for lack of better terms, that that prosthesis can take up more space. So that's typically what does happen.
Right.
There you go, Vivian. Thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, we take it on a case-by-case basis.
Yep.
Stay in Green Bay. Talk to Leslie next. Hi, Leslie.
Oh. Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was going to say I had terrible hip pain, and I also had broken a collarbone prior to the hip pain getting bad, and my shoulder completely froze with arthritis to where I couldn't even comb my hair.
Oh, dear.
But the worst for me was that I'd get on my poor horse, and my hips would seize up, and I couldn't stay on him, and I couldn't get off him.
Oh, no.
And I would always say to him, you poor boy, just don't kill me. If you kill me, you're going to lose your happy home.
Oh, boy.
But I had tried the physical therapy, which didn't do a lot for me. I'll be right up honest about that. But I started taking an herbal supplement called Joint Advantage. And for the first month, it did absolutely nothing. And I'm thinking I'm going to need a hip replacement, you know, because the pain was not getting better. And by the end of the month, though, I was completely pain-free. I could comb my hair again. My hips didn't hurt anymore. I could mount my horse on the ground and get off him without aching. It was just amazing. When I was feeling better, I stopped taking it. My joints froze right up again.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. What was it called again?
Joint Advantage.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So
well, then I've been taking it for more than 20 years now, and I find if I start to forget to take it, I'll get little twinges.
Okay.
But I double up on the days I'm going to have to do hard work. Like I'm 72 now, and I still stack my own hay bales, unload and stack my own hay.
Good for you. So this is a great example of someone wanting to maintain an activity level, and you found a supplement that works. What we will say about supplementation is that they are not FDA regulated. And so every brand can be a little different, if you will. And it's very important that if you introduce a supplement, that you communicate very effectively with your primary care physician and or your pharmacist, because the last thing you want to have happen is one of these supplements to interact negatively with some of the prescription medication you are taking.
Right.
So that's an important thing to keep in mind if you choose to go down the path of supplementation.
And this is a fairly typical kind of joint supplement.
Mm-hmm.
It's got chondroitin sulfate and glucosamine and things like that. So you need to make sure, first of all, that it's safe for you to take. So if you're taking any other medications, check with your physician or pharmacist as well.
Right, exactly.
Thank you very much, Leslie, for calling. Appreciate it. Ted in Spooner will give you a chance. Hi, Ted.
Yeah, hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, mine's a little long, difficult situation. I had cancer from Agent Orange in Vietnam, and they give me a hormonal shot, and all my muscles hurt. And then I had a total knee replacement. So that kind of complicated things.
Sure.
And now it seems like I got a delayed reaction between my mind and my muscles to get them to do things.
Yep, right. Mm-hmm. So that neuromuscular control or teaching your muscles how to move and do things.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So we can strengthen muscles, but you have to have they have to be plugged in. You need the neural component to tell them what to do. So that connection between your brain and your muscles is an important one. Ted, have you seen physical therapy?
Oh, God, I've been physical therapy for off and on a lot. They help out, definitely.
Okay. Have you tried exercising in a pool at all? Sometimes that's a little bit easier on your joints. Make it easier for your muscles to move in a warm pool?
No, I've never tried that.
That might be good. It also will give you a little bit more of the proprioceptive awareness. The water would give you that tactile input. So from that perspective, it might help as well.
Right, exactly. And it also helps, I think, with socialization. So getting out in that kind of environment where there's other people exercising and so on, that might be a nice place if it's not something you've tried to help make that mind-muscle connection for you, as well as unload your joints, make it a little bit easier for your muscles to actually move them.
Right. The other thing I would suggest is if once you kind of get better from pool therapy is I would suggest mirror therapy to make that connection between your mind and the movement. You can do well-sighted movements and kind of train the unaffected side. And so you can use, it's called mirror therapy, and PT would know about that too. And that would be an option for you as well.
So you stand in front of a mirror?
Well, you do motion with the unaffected side, and then it helps train your brain to have the affected side move the same way. That's a big, broad concept of it. But
okay.
It's visual input to kind of train in parallelism.
Yeah,
right.
There we go.
Yeah.
Ted, thank you very much. Lee and Wild Rose, your turn. Hi, Lee.
Hi there. I had a double hip replacement 6 years ago in my late 50s, and it was very, very successful. I don't have any trouble with my hips or my back, and it was great. My question is, my doctor is very conservative about his approach to things, and he has told me no yoga, no canoeing, no kayaking, no downhill skiing, no cross-country skiing, And I used to do all of those things. And I'm wondering what your feeling is about that.
Were you a posterolateral approach? Do you know? Or what were your hip precautions? Do you know? Like no flexion past 90? Were those your precautions? Do you remember?
Right. Yes.
Okay. So it was posterior.
So if you had a posterolateral approach, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if your surgeon's concerns with kayaking and things like that is that you're sitting in so much flexion, if that's a concern.
Yeah, but that was how long ago?
Six years ago? Yeah.
And you haven't had any issues with dislocation?
No.
Yeah. Well, 6 years, you're probably not going to. So,
no.
It's a little sticky situation because we are not in a position to go against a physician's recommendations. What I can tell you that I tell my patients is that the hip precautions for your approach are no flexion past 90, no crossing midline, and no internal rotation. You are most likely to dislocate in the combination of flexion, internal rotation, and adduction. That is when you do all three of those motions together. But to do any one in isolation, like tell me you never flex your hip past 90 degrees to put on your shoes or to get in and out of a car. People flex past 90. They internally rotate their hip. They cross their legs over. So you are unlikely to dislocate with any one of those things, kayaking being probably the safest, swimming, I don't see how swimming would be an issue whatsoever.
Exactly.
For things like downhill skiing and the risk is falling.
Right. Exactly. So. Right. Yeah. Especially kayaking in calm, controlled waters. The biggest thing would probably be getting in and out of the kayak just to make sure you do that very safely and you don't.
Right.
But I see no issues with it once you're in the kayak.
Yeah. So that's my opinion.
There you go. Thanks, Lee. Appreciate the call. Well, let's see. Speaking of skiing, Jake, have you got a quick comment?
Well, I'm a competitive skier, and I've noticed something in my hamstring hip area. It's not severe pain. I'm just wondering basically if I can ski through this or if I need to be backing off at a time when I'm really trying to ramp up.
Okay.
So you said hip. Is it mostly on the backside? Do you think it's a hamstring issue, like an insertional where your hamstring inserts right on your sit bone? Is that what you're thinking?
I was actually doing some hill pole running and felt just a little something right where the kind of where the hamstring and I guess what I'd call glute, I'm not quite sure what you call that, would join.
Sounds
but
like
it's not like it's specific to a specific area. There's not real acute pain. It's just kind of a dull feeling sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So have you tried stretching your hamstring, stretching your glutes? Does that help it?
I guess I've really not tried that.
Well, that's probably where I'd start.
I would start with that.
Because if it responds to that, then you know it's probably a muscle issue. If it doesn't respond to that, it could be something else, and that's when you need to be seen. So if it's a muscle issue, stretch, strengthen, see if it responds. If not, then you need to see somebody and figure out what exactly it is.
Right.
There you go. Thank you so much for that call. And thanks so much to Lori and Jill. By the way, the last time Jill and Lori were on, we talked about how to prevent pain when shoveling. And if you missed that, because we got snow coming, or maybe you just like to revisit it, you can find an article on our blog with their tips. So go to WPR.org/Larry, and on the right side, you'll find some information about that blog. And if you missed part of this show or just want to hear it again, you can always go to our archives at WPR.org/Larry to hear recordings of our broadcast. We go back, way back, many years. Tomorrow we'll talk with a local baking instructor about how to make some delicious things to try during the holiday season. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.